Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about mathematical modelling of an illness. Now, all of us, if we haven't been ill already, and we're living in this modern age, we're eventually going to be ill, eventually down the track. And depending where you are, you'll be ill in into a new environment. The same illness, but there's going to be a new environment where society and science is going to interact with you in a very different way. And as you're navigating through this, as I'm navigating through it, you sort of try and link one group of people up with the other and yet another, and sometimes you're left empty-handed, and at the end of the day, people are operating on different mathematical models, and we don't have a language to describe the different mathematical models that people are operating with. And when I do say mathematical models, yeah, there is a certain amount of mathematical models. There's a certain amount of information theory, or Bayes' theorem, of how you calculate probabilities, assess probabilities, psychology there. There's another, Bickford's theorem. There's all these theorems and maths to look at it. So let's start off, and we'll develop a few mathematical models. Now, I won't go into myself, for instance. A lot of people pick up their beliefs and beliefs, desires and actions, BDAs, picking up on their illness from a lot, get pre-coached, if they haven't been ill themselves, from soapies, the media. And there is obviously a sequence and resolution which is either within the half hour or within the next episode. Things are resolved in multiple layers, and this is just the one start of the model. And what here is that the patient testimony is incredibly important, and you have to listen to it, and it's a sequence of testimonies, and people make a very some binary judgment on some testimony of answers. So it's your typical hospital drama. Someone comes in, it's not been diagnosed, the rookie comes in and asks key questions, and sees evidence not fitting. What am I to say? That's the sort of base model. And I'd love if we had a number which we could say, well, this type of statement that you hear, that's an A type. Let's call it an A type model. So often when you've gone through the process, someone will talk up to you, and they'll ask you a question: did you tell the doctor this? Did they listen to you? Did you explain it to them properly? And did they process it in this way? And did this result happen? And the answer is rather saying, no, I didn't do that. And therefore, you know, well, what do you expect? It's just saying that those people are in a type framework. Now, another difference to it is, I'll go into what happened to me in this situation, is that you have the surgeons, or medical professionals, which have stop playing if you don't have, if you can expose yourself to duty of care. And this sounds crass, but they have to very much limit, people aren't aware of it, limit the patient's interaction. This is if you deal with specialists, limits the interaction to deal in a very precise time and space and region and a trackability. So duty of care means that the medical people write lots of letters to each other. Letters, documentation, or such and such a date. There's a letter, documentation. It's a nice clear thing for court. And it is really necessary because there's a whole train load of people that you actually want to, a bit like selling something at a retail shop, wrap it up, put it on, put a price tag, and it sale and offer, and it moves from your domain out to the customer's domain under a warranty system. The warranty expires and you can rule the line off. Now, that may seem crass, but it is actually, I suppose, a business transaction, and it goes through. So, I suppose my second surgeon, a good get to know you, get to understand the duty of care structure. So I'm already aware of the duty of care structure and information and consent. So there's a process that information has to be given. A brilliant operation. Then it sees me, and I had a most minor complication with a fluid build-up at the end of a scar, which is apparently, well, as you go, 70%, and 70% of people have some sort of fluid build-up on a scar, and ultrasound checked it all out, and the actual checkups are all aimed at processing people from a duty of care, given that you've come in consulted within a square window, and you have to cut it off before the patient halfway through says, "And look at my elbow," or something else. And look, just for instance, surgeons you can't phone up, and I understand the duty of care aspects of it. So, cardiologists and stuff like that, I won't communicate with them directly. I will send an email or some information to their secretaries that if they've got time, they might want to look at it so that they don't go through it. So it's hard to say on it. But the important point is that this meeting, which happened a bit earlier, she said, "Well, I won't need to see you again." And then I knew, or the other person in the room was helping me didn't know, that that was the duty of care cut off. And once you do that, I wrote a thank you letter, but with saying there's no reply. The doctor who treated me was a Dr. Orr, a young surgeon of the year, I think in 2011, something like that. She wouldn't know that, but you basically check it. And the key thing is, I suppose, not answering questions, and I just wrote a thank you letter to her with a USB of the Lego movie, which she hadn't seen, with Everything is Awesome. What is it? Everything is Awesome. If you follow the rules, all this type of stuff, and also one of a scene where animal rescuers were very emotional scenes, were taking geese that they'd prepared and releasing them into the wild, in that I was being released back into the wild. So there's this duty of care framework, which is sort of your B analysis. And then there is another analysis, which is the C-grade analysis, which is, I don't know where you can actually leave things up to say, oh God, I don't know whether this is relevant, but it will be proven relevant if the cure has come through, or I don't know, or there's... So there's A, which is the popularism. B is the business or legal or as a professional view on disease, and C is sort of the scientific research analysis, where you take the data at face value and assign it with the ambiguous. It could be not, and look at things like causality analysis. I did this in the in my I was to go into teaching from quantum physics. I would expect I had to do yet another BSc because they had some sort of confusion about what a PhD was, and did that cancel out the first BSc? So they just wanted me to do a second BSc, which is okay, and a DipEd. And then there was this person said, look, we can't tell whether this from the data, this caused that or that causes this. We can't tell. And it was supposed to be a philosophical viewpoint, but I found a paper from the Max Planck Institute which went into that. And so that goes through here as well. When you're looking at a complex situation, does A cause B or B cause A? You know, which chicken or the egg? It's causality analysis. And look, there's a lot of maths that you can throw at that, and different answers you can get by answering different questions. Like, rather than going to causality analysis or cause at the start, you can say, well, how did we arrive at this situation? And then remove, if I wasn't sent to this person, how would we view the information set? So you've got a complex information set, you go through it in different ways. So this is sort of the C, over-the-top scientific analysis. So even still, I was going to say type 1 symptoms and information which link in with the B grade, B view of it. And this is MRI scans, CAT scans, angiograms, where you actually send a little probe up your artery, your arm artery, and they send it into your heart. And actually, for me, being of a scientific background, I decided that I was not going to disturb people doing scientific measurements on me by talking to them. I'd just do it. So that actually happened to me in terms of that. They said, look, this will feel unpleasant, and it was sort of like this huge sort of, it was unpleasant, it was like this huge shock of, like that. And what I found out many months later, after I've had all the operations, and I said, look, I just never have understood what was going on there. It was they were sending a little balloon into my left coronary arteries and expanding it, and to expand the actual, to get a definitive two significant percentage on how blocked they were and why they were blocked. So they did it twice. So I had one blockage, but at a point going down to things in this coronary artery. So that for them was absolutely solid evidence, and a detailed clutch of evidence about the valve, artery valve, that it was definitely bicuspid, and therefore, you know, working out the percentages for it. Other symptoms were type 2, what I call type 2 symptoms, that they weren't going to challenge, but they weren't important in actually deciding the process through it. So you can imagine type 1, type 2 symptoms, B analysis, people on the A framework, and me looking at the C framework. You've got all these things coming through as you're going through. Looking there. Now, I had something which I had not been able to detect myself, and that's swelling. It's taken me a while to actually build up the data and the understanding for it, to actually build a likely scenario. Now, this is type 2 symptoms, and it's not whether the doctors would agree with me or not. They've affected the cure using the type A high quality symptoms. The type 2 is it's not worth talking it to me because it's just irrelevant. So a type 2 symptom was the swelling of fingers. Now, many years ago I had this cardiologist, there's another symptom, looking at my hands and said, "Are your fingers swollen?" And not my fingers swollen, I thought he was looking at my fingernails for some reason. But indeed, a sign of heart disease is swelling. And, and of course, it's a type 2 symptom, because I was swelling out, I could no longer click my fingers, type as fast as I could. And I was putting on weight and feeling uncomfortable, not being able to fit into my shirts and pants and stuff like that. You know, this was swelling and not being able to move as freely as I used to move. Now, again, I don't know. Type D, I was not working out what was going on and not putting it together, and thought, oh well, that's what being 50 something or other is. That's what happens to you when you go. That's a strange, it's, I rather like being able to do fine scale soldering or actually fix things, but my fingers are too fat and chubby now. That's why you don't get old people doing it. And I was speaking to myself, but it's taken a while to know that my liver results were off, and that perhaps I had a fatty liver. But it so turns out that if you have a heart disease, your heart's not working properly, your liver is goes off. And if your liver goes off, and look, bear in mind, this is me working without the pressing the discussion there. If your liver goes off, it fails, your liver fails to clean and process the albumin. These are globular albumin, which is forms 90% of your blood plasma. This is basic circular protein, or spherical protein with I think 11 to 13 disulfide bonds, and a small structure in the environment means that this sucks out the sodium ions in your flesh, and this means that the sucking out of sodium ions means that you've got a osmotic pressure that enables your body to maintain an osmotic pressure, and so your blood, your heart actually doesn't pump fluid into your flesh. There's a reverse osmotic pressure, and that's all based on your liver operating properly. That's for me as a scientist, getting a causal relationship to that's making sense. Of course, once my heart was fixed, my swelling reduced. In fact, almost straight after the first operation, where they put the valve in, the thing, I sort of accidentally put my fingers together, and I went, I could click. I went, hang on, how is it? In celebration. In fact, I've been in absolute party mode, sort of getting back on my feet as these sorts of things come along to the liver. Now, of course, what had happened is that the there's a thing called calcification, or just packing up the flesh, and the heart wall and the actual positioning of the valve was not sufficiently strong, so the valve came loose. I think there's 2/3 or half of the stitches were left intact, and again, you've got all this complexity that's just not information. So that was picked up a month or so after, but within this a percentage in the literature where this leak results. Let's step back a bit. So they had good circumstantial, good circumstantial evidence and patient history that the valve was causing strokes. How is that going on? And that I had a restriction in the artery, and so that's a situation that if they can moderate other risks, that we could wait and go in. They could all different calmly. But I should have said that when they actually cut open the aorta, so what they do is they cut your chest down, a zipper down the centre, then they get a small stainless steel jigsaw and actually saw through your flesh. And the cutting is not a bloody sort of cutting because they cut, I understand, with an ultrasonic scalpel, which cauterizes as it cuts, and then they get wires and they pull your chest open and have a look at your heart, and then the aorta, which is a aortal, the aorta is actually a central vein. It's sort of it's got several offshoots up to the brain, but it's actually a pressure vessel, roughly a few centimetres wide, and it's shaped as a candy cane. It hooks up from the heart. Well, it hooks around from the heart. Your heart is actually not facing up and down. It's pointing off to your... So the bottom of your heart is actually pointing to the left of your root cage. So it's inverted to your left. Your left lung has... three sacs broken up. Your left lung is basically a double lung, and your right lung is a triple lung. It's got three individual sacs. So, by definition, we tend to say two lungs, but in actual fact, when you look at it, there's five lungs if you define lungs as a air sac, which has got this membrane around the outside of it. So nonetheless, so the aorta hooks around. You slice open the aorta. This is being put on a heart lung machine. Slice open the aorta, and then you can look at there. And there was a sort of not a gasp, but this was definitely rotten. Now what had happened is I had maintained myself by working out things weren't going wrong. Were going wrong with insufficient information. I was exercising as best as I could. I stopped exercising towards the end of the operation, towards going into the operation just to chill out. So the actual heart and arteries and everything else was in top notch except for this other one. And when they opened up, they said, it's rotten. And they cut it out. It's rotten. Now, what I really would have liked to have asked is, could I save my rotten valve so I can have a look at it? But I mentioned that on the second operation that I would have liked to have kept my old middle mechanical valve. But they said, look, the age of giving kids their tonsils and giving body parts back to people have long since passed, and the actual valve gets returned to the company. So you've got these type 2 symptoms being managed by people in the C group, sort of the computational group, looking through. And of course, things would have gone through if I had reported. Well, I suppose I had reported, but they were looked over. Now, of course, towards the end of the second stage, where the valve went in and was loose, and throughout all this, I've been bullied at work, and so that put a very severe strain in the system. And so when I say bullied at work, I returned to work, had a bullying session. I thought I could actually feel the blood rush on the outside or the valve. I could definitely feel the valve. So the faulty valve, I could feel it. This new valve positioned, and I can't feel it at all. What a sensation. Now, I think there's probably a D class. This is demonic class, where people come in and they basically have got their preconception that they want to get to, and they just, this is basically the silly view on it. But what had happened is that I began to go downhill the second time, about probably less than 9 months after the first operation. Began to bloat up again, and so this time I began to put a bit more information together, and I had this really bizarre episode. So this is in the C camp, where you're just taking in information and not putting it together. And I had this phantom gallbladder stone, and what happened is that I had this pain. I went into a hospital at night. I left, had people looking after the kids, so I went into hospital, and I reported this back pain and at various positions. And long and short of it, I had done a complete realistic enactment of a gallbladder stone. And people said, "Look, we don't muck around nowadays with those symptoms. We take your gallbladder out the next day. We scan it, and if there's stones, we've been through it so many times." And what happened, including the miraculous, here's the pain relief in a cup, but really the pain stopped within a matter of less than a minute. It went from moderate pain. So I was really impressed with everyone, and you get a sense of how quick things are. Said, "Look," took blood from my finger and said, "Are you a diabetic?" And I said, "Oh, no, not." And then I couldn't even complete the sentence before they had the actual blood sugar sample done. And then, what else? They had done the bloods within 20 minutes or something like that for the liver aspect. And so they did a full scan there. And that sort of brought my attention to the liver. Now, what I'm saying is that you've got these type 2 symptoms which don't get picked up in the B category of business stuff. You've got a limited amount of time with these specialists. That's within, like, it's not a country fireside chat. And so you really have all these different A, B, C, and D processes happening all the time. Now, the other thing which I really want to specify, because this was an obvious symptom that wasn't psychosomatic, or so this is again from dizziness, split vision, and also blacking out of vision, or sort of loss of vision. These were definitely classes, B class symptoms. And what used to happen is that when I was bullied, or people put me under very, very silly stress, you know, it was obviously something. I don't mind things being wrong, but if it's, you know, contrived wrong, very high stress. And what would happen is that I'd black out after it. I'd lose a bit of vision after it. And I was trying to work out what on earth was happening. And in between the first valve and the second valve, I was out looking after the kids in the playground, and lost the vision in one eye for precisely 20 seconds. Now, at this time, I had developed podcasting, and so I was able to pretty soon develop a podcast and bundle it up, and I describe the exact stuff. And so the idea is that if it wasn't an A class So if it was a type 1 symptom, then it was likely psychosomatic. So you had this idea to actually not report it, but also report it because it was actually real. So what if I can quite describe it, in my left eye only, so what had happened is I said I had reported through my GP this, the visual field losses, and I had repeated, I went in, saw an these very good optics doctors, eye jocks, and they sent me for a complete brain scan, which you can see up on the internet, and they use basically it's an MRA, it's a magnetic resonance angiogram, and what they use is that the I now understand it, that they use the different classes, they use different resonance time doing it. I think it's a multiple spin echo that they're looking at, but what they also do is that they look at anomalous reduction in signal from if you have fresh blood flowing into an area, it hasn't been it hasn't been primed with the radio frequency, and so you can actually see the angiogram quite well by this way. It's quite an interesting technique. So they had a good look at it, and but I had reported, to the best of my knowledge, I was taking obviously notes on this, that occasionally they were in both eyes. Now the important thing is that it must be in one eye, because it's a small little clot breaking off and sticking in the back of your eye, and I reported it there, and there was managed on the second report when I put in the podcast. Now the podcast I had to send to the secretary of my cardiologist, so he could not listen to it if he didn't want to. Which is, and then I sent it to my treating eye doctor, who then sent it to the little podcast to their. I might have the podcast somewhere, I'm sure. I don't know whether I'll publish it. I should publish it at some stage. I don't know why. But then I sent it to the to the eye person, who sent it to an eye neurologist. Then I saw the eye neurologist, George Sad, SADD. Oh, I suppose it doesn't really matter. And he listened to it, went through, and then he just said, oh, heart valve. No, it's 100% heart valve. And so I then knew, but I had been plotting that I was only getting these symptoms. So they seemed like real symptoms, but I was only getting it when people were being very unreasonable to me, that they would take me out of my comfort zone. You know, there'd be something fraudulent, you know, something obviously wrong, like a document which is obviously misspelt, and you look at the metadata of the document, and the people have been working on the document a few minutes before giving it to you, yet they say it's, you know, a document dated really early on, you know, that sort of thing. So all of these episodes, every single one of these episodes, blinding episodes, was when I was being bullied. And so or dealing with it, or people being unreasonable. And this last one, I was just struggling, trying to remember someone's name, and actually having to go back through these bullying incidences. And then I had this blackout in the eye. And now, fortunately, this same information went through a different route, where the people looking at it weren't within the B framework, the minimum diagnosis measurement. So you want the minimum amount of information to form your route of action, because if you have many bits of information, it's more likely that you can make a clinical mistake. So someone from the outside put that in. And so this went on, and So when I had the new valve in, the new valve, I had small sections of it. And what happened is that one of the things is that this loss of vision, because it lasts a particular amount of time and it gets resolved very quickly, and it's basically the clock going up, the clock occluding, the clock going through. Apparently you do have clots all the time going through. And so when I had the new valve in, I was still having these clots without the stress. And particular, you know, people, I didn't have to go. Now, my model was that I was trying to work out how this could possibly happen, because I began to work out there were clots. There must be clots at a particular point in time. Were there clots, you know, where else in the system could they be released, and under what processes would it be released? And it just turns out to be just, I believe the model I have. It really doesn't matter, because it's not a an A-class symptom. A type 1 symptom for use in the B framework. So this is me looking at using a C framework, looking at it. I hope you can understand it, looking through it as the going through. And now, what had happened then is that subsequent, that once I knew everything, I could record and note everything, and I could actually see smaller clots. Small clots actually go further into your eye and block a different section off, and lasting for a longer time. And now the great thing is that with the warfarin is also the albumin. Warfarin also goes into your albumin and stuffs your kidneys up, production clotting factor. And so I have to bleed 2.5 to 3.5 times more than the average person. I can thankfully say that with the warfarin and the new valve, there's no more of these symbols. These little mini strokes, and so it all goes through here. And so part of your narrative is, You have to clinically say, oh, look, I've been bullied at work and I've seen these effects. If you don't add that in, that aspect in, you can't see it. And so working through that, there's all these three or four different frameworks which you look at, and people don't really differentiate between the different frameworks, and therefore can't really explain what's going on. Now, again, here that general management, there's that huge frustration of what's going on, but by keeping it that computational, that C group, what actually happened is that they got a really good echocardiogram of the through a toe, which is a transesophageal probe, and then they showed it to a group of 6 cardiologists and 5 surgeons. They had a group discussion of it, which is sort of thing that I do like, and it's really important in that they're dealing with a population of people. They can't really go and spend time looking at these B-grade symptoms, so they're able to look at it and work out a course of action. And so what the course of action was, to remove the valve, replace it with a slightly higher grade valve. And may I say, mechanical valves are fantastic. I support them 100%, because they're made with quantum mechanical properties. You couldn't get better than a mechanical valve, but they place it in a slightly different position using a cow patch and then stitching it from the other side. Again, I haven't really asked. It doesn't really matter. Then I've been able to take take it all in and manage the recovery a lot better. And of course, things feel a lot better. I can actually tell. So I wasn't able to communicate properly that, oh no, well, it was pretty obvious that I was getting very tired all the time with the valve, the wonky valve. But I can now so what happens here is, if you know the C-grade stuff, there's a whole lot of things you don't know. Like, you don't know what's causing the blindness and things like that, or what's causing the dizziness, what's causing the split vision. It could be many things. Of course, if you're being bullied, you can't really, that's a factor, and you're not going through. And it's only when you actually, it's a bit like Angela Lansbury in Murder, She Wrote. It's only at the end, when it's really all obvious, that you can actually pull out the actual stoppers and say it's definitively that. And you only really want to do that in the C-grade type of stuff with secondary symptoms. And the reason that you... There's confusion that if you have people working with their A-grade soap opera view of the place, and they come in and they have a very simplistic view of what B-grade, no understanding of what the C-grade is, and further, no understanding of what people in that D-grade, people who are not primarily concerned with you getting better, might be the answer. That's not on their agenda. They have a different worldview. They want to achieve certain results, and so they're just not even playing. So it's quite a complex thing, and it does have massive repercussions. So I can say that in terms of having the heart disease, one of the things is that you do get down in the dumps and depressed when you get heart disease, and no amount of happy music is going to help you if the underlying cause is that. And then you've got these other symptoms to go through. And if you've got other things wrong happening in your life, it's really hard to actually see what's going on. But then this overall framework, this computational framework, the C thing, looking through, you say, oh, well, there's obviously this D group of analysis, which is not going to support me. It is unlikely that the rehab's going to be in good faith. Therefore, I should... pull out and start podcasting, working on things, rebooting my memory, and not making any assumptions. Basically, I have not made any assumptions about what I could remember, what I could do, or how things could go. And so that's sort of this overall framework, which is looking at all these different levels working together, has meant that I've struck out, and I've said, in general, I believe in so many months, I might be able to get out of a podcasting engine. I might be able to do this. I might be able to discover it. And again, in this entire C framework, there's a whole lot of unknowns. So I'm looking at podcasting. But hopefully I'll be able to get people to come in at certain stage when I've got a sufficient volume up there to come in and tweak and actually remove some of the obstacles and actually help me connect it across, come across. Yep. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover
truly amazing things. Understand them and tell others. Thanks for listening.